It seems a little weird to be talking about outdoor classical concerts when there's still visible snow on the mountains, but Brit Festivals just announced the musical lineup for the orchestra season starting in late July. And there's a major bash this week to make a full formal rollout of the plans for the season, which explains why the music director of the Brit Orchestra, Teddy Abrams, is in town before Valentine's Day. He's here in the studio to chat about the season, now 5 months and change away. Maestro, thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here. It's always exciting to talk about Brit. You know, of course, it is snowy and cold, but every time I come back here, I just start kind of doing my own internal countdown to what for me is one of my absolute favorite times of year, and that's, of course, when the Brit Orchestra comes to the Brit Hill in Jacksonville.
Is this your shortest assignment of the year, though? I mean, in the sense of, like, from start to finish, from, you know, because there's, what, 3 weekends and done?
Yeah, I mean, the festival is extremely compact, but I often remind people that in the course of a normal symphonic schedule, so a year-round orchestra, a repertory orchestra, they usually do one program per week. So a subscription concert would usually be repeated a few times. So in my hometown in Louisville, we do one of these concerts over the course of a week. And at Brit, we do 7 programs in 3 weeks. So, you know, we're doing the equivalent of about 2 months' worth of music compacted into this very short time, which makes it exciting. That's why it's a festival. And we really, I tell people, we really rehearse our music incredibly thoroughly. We're not choosing pieces that we can just kind of go, well, everybody knows that one, so we'll get it together, do you know, dress rehearsal, show up for the show, and that, you know, that's one way to do it, but we've established pretty firmly that we are all about doing adventurous creative programming that takes a lot of rehearsal time, and fortunately our musicians come here kind of hungry for that, and every single program has a story and a theme to it, and but that means that there are some complexities, and a lot of music that we're all playing is quite new or unfamiliar and presents a challenge, which is part of the point.
Well, and a challenge for the audience too. This is actually a question I had for later, but we're talking about it now. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there's always, I mean, you've already gotten a reputation for pushing the envelope a bit.
Good.
Which is a good thing. But and there's always with any orchestra season, you're finding a mix between playing the well appreciated chestnuts and some stuff that is going to make people go, what am I hearing here?
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you feel like you've gotten to know the audience well enough to anticipate the how far you could push the envelope?
Well, and I think we've all grown together, actually, because being new to the job now 5 years ago, I was starting from scratch with everything, with the orchestra itself, with the audiences, with the region and the capabilities. And of course, part of the job of an artistic leader is not just to provide for the present, but it's to think about the future. And the future for an artistic organization is not something that anybody can just tell you. It's not something that people can determine by their own likes. It's something that you have to have a vision for, a real sense of going to a place that people haven't been. And I think that one of the really interesting balancing points in any artistic leadership position is taking people to places that they haven't been while also reminding them of the things they love.
So you bring them back safely is what you're saying.
Exactly. And it's something I think about all the time, especially now as I'm entering into whatever this next phase. Now that I'm 30, something I do think about a lot is the sense of familiarity and how important it is to people that when they go to a museum, they will be willing to see all kinds of new stuff or very challenging things or works that ask them to rethink their entire definition of art, as long as there's something that they can see that feels reaffirming or feels like it connects them to a greater story that they're already a part of. And I mean, you go to a place like the MoMA, and that's a great example, where people want to go see their Monets and Van Goghs, but they'll also go up to the floor where it's totally crazy, and it could be anything. And I think that there's something that I think about where this sense of familiarity is such an important part of musical tradition, too, because music is a tradition that's passed on from generation to generation. And by playing things that are both new that we hope become part of that tradition and things that are older and familiar, you're connecting this long, long series of human history. And so I've tried to create that balance. And this year is probably our most integrated, I think, since I've been here, where every program offers something that challenges or questions or just maybe offers a new piece that could be a great delight and an inspiration. But it's all woven into the fabric of the big picture story.
Teddy Abrams is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the music director of the Brit Orchestra. The season opens in late July. He's in town for a fundraiser and a rollout of the season, and joining us here on the Jefferson Exchange. Leonard Bernstein had to be played this year.
Yes,
no question.
This is the Bernstein Centennial. And, you know, Bernstein is one of these figures who has become kind of a prophet or saint in recent years. I mean, he only passed away now, about 30 years ago. He died when I was 3. So I feel very connected to him, although I never, of course, got to meet him. But he is, in fact, my grand teacher, as I tell people. So my own mentor, Michael Tilson Thomas, who's music director of the San Francisco Symphony, was one of his students, one of his proteges. And of course, Tilson Thomas was here last year. So there's this very kind of tight, woven connection, even if I never got to meet Bernstein. But Bernstein, as I said, has kind of had a saint-like status placed on him relatively recently. And I think it's partly because every large musical organization is asking the big questions about what's our future, what are we supposed to really be doing here, how do we connect with our audiences, how do we continue to grow while serving everybody. And Bernstein asked those same questions and answered them a good solid generation or two ahead of his time. You know, Bernstein came up with a model for music education at a time when no orchestras were focused on that, when basically everyone assumed the schools will take care of that. And Bernstein basically foresaw a tremendous amount of American educational history in creating a whole product line of education concerts that were available to people to ensure there would be a future audience. It was brilliant.
There was quite a bit of outreach, and I was young and remember that at that time.
Exactly.
The New York Philharmonic when I lived in New York.
I would say that if he hadn't done that very thing and create the young people's concerts with the New York Philharmonic, which were, of course, broadcast nationally on CBS, we would not have the same orchestral culture that we have today, which already needs a lot of work to grow and to make it more engaged. But the fact is that Bernstein helped tremendously to create the culture we have.
Let's hear some Bernstein. So this is actually one of the pieces that will be played. This is the Jeremiah movement. Let's hear a little bit of it. So I must admit that the rhythms there do remind me of I Want to Live in America.
Yes,
from West Side Story.
Exactly. And that's a classic Bernstein thing. He would love to sneak in kind of funky rhythms like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3. And a lot of the reason that he did that was actually derived from his love of music from around the world. Bernstein was one of the great pluralistic populist artists while also being one of the great ingenious, brilliant kind of classical composers, and his love of everything from Latin jazz to Indonesian gamelan or whatever it was, he had this voracious appetite and could kind of absorb all this music and would integrate it, which is how in West Side Story, for example, he's able to use things like mambos and all kinds of Latin rhythms so successfully and authentically even. He just had this amazing sense for bringing people together through music, and so we're celebrating Bernstein throughout the season, sometimes in relatively sneaky ways that you might not recognize, and other times in overt ways, like a Bernstein piece itself, obviously, is a great way to celebrate it. But every program, more or less, has a nod to Lenny, as we call him, even if you're not quite aware of what it would be from the surface, but it's threaded throughout the entire season.
So the Symphony No. 1, Jeremiah, is the one we just heard a bit from, and that'll be on July 28th, a Saturday, with Sasha Cook as the mezzo-soprano.
That's right. And so she's actually one of the absolute most sought-after vocalists alive right now. And it's a huge honor to have her come to Brit, and quite a remarkable get, I must say. She's singing two works. One of them is the last movement of Bernstein Symphony No. 1. That's the only movement that has a vocalist, and it's an unusual piece. That fast part you just heard is the middle movement. The last movement is this kind of beautiful lamentation, this prayer, it's kind of heart-wrenching, but also glorious and glowing. And so she will sing that, and then she'll follow that up with a piece by one of our favorite composers that we've been playing every single year since I've been here, Mason Bates. And Mason just wrote a piece for her to sing called Passage. It was only premiered last year. And so she will sing that too. It's a piece about JFK, actually. And there's the connection. JFK and Bernstein were actually friends. I think it's the last last time a classical musician was friends on a buddy basis with the president of the United States. But they were. And of course, when JFK died, not only did Bernstein dedicate a number of works to him, he also inaugurated the Kennedy Center itself, where Passage was premiered. His mass. So anyway, it's there. I know that there's probably, for somebody trying to follow this at 8:45 in the morning, they would have gotten lost in that long story. But the point is,
Bernstein.
Yeah.
Buddies, yes. There is another Bernstein chunk we want to play here, and this is from late in the season. This is Candide. This is the overture from Candide. It's not just in the way that Bernstein composed music, but the way he conducted music as well. I have shown at least one of our student assistants, without the sound being up, him conducting the Mozart Requiem Dies Irae, because he looks like he's doing a disco dance. He gets his body so into the conducting.
Well, Bernstein was such a character. I mean, it's almost impossible to describe him because if you watch him speaking, or you watch him conducting, or you just read any of the biographical information about how he interacted with people, he was larger than life. He loomed enormous. Like, anytime you put Bernstein in the room, it was just like this enormous star that was there, this sun-like character. But the thing that propelled him wasn't his ego, although I'm sure Bernstein, like many conductors, had a significant ego. But the thing that made Bernstein special is he had a genuine love of humanity. It went beyond just people, but it was really, he believed in what we can all do. I know that this sounds like a big platitude, but he believed that especially music was something that could make the world a better place, which is why he was so obsessed in a way that very few artists are with bringing music to everyone. And he never gave up on that goal. I mean, to his last days, he was obsessed with sharing music, with teaching music, with bringing music to people that didn't have what he thought they might be able to have. And that's why he's so special. And of course, the joy comes through. You listen to that opening of Candide Overture. How could you not smile and just feel like this radiant sense of energy while you're listening to that? It's not possible to listen to that and not have Bernstein's kind of infectious energy come to you.
Teddy Abrams is the music director of the Brit Orchestra. We're talking about the season starting in late July here on the Jefferson Exchange. So one of the things that's different about this season is I noticed that the Pops concert actually comes at the beginning rather than the end of the season.
That's right. Now, Pops concert is by far our least expensive performance. It's something that's really designed to be fun for everyone, for families. But the reality is that all of our concerts are not particularly expensive. They're
actually fun. Lowered ticket prices this year.
Yeah, we lower the ticket prices. I mean, that's one of my bragging points, but something that I said when I got this job, I looked at the ticket prices and said, well, this makes sense because it's very expensive to put on an orchestra, and even with these ticket prices, we're still having to raise a large amount of money to pay for it. But honestly, why can't we make it our mission to lower ticket prices until they completely disappear, is what I often say. But we have significantly lowered the prices. So lawn tickets now are what are they now? $20. Which is, that's a significant decrease from where they used to be. And how many things actually get cheaper in this world?
Not many, I've
noticed. Not many. And the reason that it's getting cheaper is because we think everybody should have access to Brit. Nobody should have to say, well, we can't come to Brit because it's too expensive. That's just not right. We are as much public servants as we are artists. And anyway, though, the Pops concert, though, is our big kind of for everyone show. And I've always thought, well, the Pops concert comes towards the end of the season every year. And a lot of people get super jazzed about Brit, and they say, oh, I want to come to more concerts. And we often only have one or two left. So this time we're going to do it at the beginning of the season. That way, if people come to Brit for the first time, they have the option of coming to six other performances.
Right. So that is on Wednesday, July 25th. 2 days later, you do the Pines of Rome, and Misha Bruger-Gospin will be here, doing a work that has no title yet from Gabriel Kahane.
Yes. So Gabe Kahane. Now, there are some again, I don't want to get too into the family tree here, but basically this is simple. Misha sang with us last season. She sang Michael Telson Thomas's work, which was a real standout performance, I think, at Brit, and she's just a kind of magnanimous personality, and everybody recognized her talent. On top of that, Gabriel Kahane's father, Jeff Kahane, played Beethoven's fourth piano concerto with us last year. Gabe is a classical musician too, but he also does lots of different things. He's a singer-songwriter. He is an actual writer. He wrote a beautiful op-ed in the New York Times just a couple weeks ago about a major project that he did. And this piece is something we've commissioned along with the Oregon Symphony up in Portland. It is a major new work about or inspired by homelessness in America. And he's been traveling from town to town collecting the stories and the backgrounds of people who lived in some degree of poverty and homelessness, and is trying to kind of integrate their stories and what he's learned from that into this piece. And it sounds like a very hard thing to do. That's not a typical background for a vocal composition, but if anybody can do it, he can. His most recent project was to tell stories of people that he met on trains, and he did 12,000 miles of train travel around the country.
Wow.
On November 9th, 2016. Anyway, more than you need.
Man after my own heart. And this also includes Anna Klein's Abstractions. Let's hear a little bit about that. So about 60 seconds left. Anna Klein, go.
she is one of the great talents of the modern generation. She's probably in her mid-30s right now, and she just represents everything from the populist affect to pure compositional talent. So she's an absolute all-star.
All right, so we don't have time to get the clip in now, but Edgar Meyer, the bassist, is coming as well. Tell us a bit about him.
Edgar is the double bassist. That's what I just say, the, with a capital T. Edgar is somebody who transcended what people believe about the instrument. A lot of people think that the double bass is not a solo instrument, but it is, in fact, a solo instrument in his hands. And he integrates folk music and bluegrass with absolute command of the classical repertoire. And so we're doing one of his craziest pieces here.
Sounds fun. So this is a 7 concerts altogether, starting with the opening night Pops concert on Wednesday, July 25th. And it'll be a lot warmer by the time we see Teddy Abrams next. He is the music director of the Brit Orchestra. Always good to see you here in the studio with us, Maestro.
Thanks so much for having me.